The 24th parak continues discussing various Isuri Durabanan instituted by Chazal to protect the sanctity of Shabbos, but Mishnah Aleph will actually start with a heter of Chazal permitting what would otherwise be an Isur Durabanan. So there's an Isur Durabanan of Amir La'akum. We cannot instruct the non-Jew to do on Shabbos what we cannot do on Shabbos. We can't even instruct them before Shabbos to do something on Shabbos for us that we are not permitted to do on Shabbos. But we're talking in Mishnah Aleph about a situation that indeed Chazal permitted it. Mishi hi shich baderach. Somebody was traveling before Shabbos, and he sees the sun started to set, and he has all of his valuables with him. So Chazal were lenient. Nosen kisol lenachri. They permitted him to override the prohibition, the Isur Derabanan of Amir La'akum, to ask the non-Jew for help to hold his assets, because they knew that if we don't permit this Amir La'akum, this Isur Derabanan, the person may indeed violate the Isur Deraisa, because he's not going to very easily part from his assets. V'im'ein imo nachri. And if there is no non-Jew that he can give his wallet to and other valuables, minicho al hachamor. He can put it onto his chamor. What this means is, although there's an Isur D'oraisa for our animals to do work on Shabbos as well, not only us, but our animals as well, in this situation, he's permitted to put his valuables on his chamor, but there are some conditions, important condition. He needs to put it on and take it off while the animal is walking. He has to ensure that the animal doesn't do the akira and the havara, carry four amos, and do the hanacha. So the owner of the animal is going to do the akira and hanacha. He's going to put it on, take it off, and it's simply the animal that's going to walk with the items on it. So that is the heter of Chazal for that as well. Higia lechatzar achitzona, when you have that animal and you get to the outer courtyard of the village that you arrived at, because we've been talking about when you're not in a village, you're in the wilderness, you're not in civilization. In this situation, now that you get to the town, now you cannot use the animal anymore. The heter goes away. So what you have to do is notel asakelim hanitalim b'shabbos. What you would do is you take off the non-muks items off of the back of the animal, v'she'ena nitalim b'shabbos, and those items that are muksa that you cannot carry on Shabbos, matires achavalim, you would open up, you would undo the ropes that are holding it on, basakim nofli meilim, and the muksa items, literally the sacks holding the muksa items, would fall on the floor by themselves because you have to stop using that animal. Mishnah Beis discussing is a tircha yaseira, Chazal instituted as well, that even when there's no malacha per se, no malacha of the lamentes malachos, but a tircha yaseira, an excessive exertion, is also prohibited on Shabbos. However, there are times that Chazal did not legislate to prohibit a tircha yaseira. For example, we're going to talk a lot about feeding of animals that are your animals, that it's your responsibility to feed. They don't have access to food otherwise, so Chazal would permit a tircha yaseira in certain circumstances to feed those animals. Other circumstances, they didn't permit it. Mishnah Beis, matirin pikiei amir lifnei behema. If somebody has bundles of food, it's tied on both ends, they would be permitted to untie the food and put it in front of the animal because they need to eat. However, if it's not necessary to scatter it for them, because this type of animal, if it's just bundles of straw, they can eat by themselves without scattering it. It would be a tircha yaseira for us to scatter it, so it wouldn't be permitted to scatter in front of them. However, umefas besin esa keeping, when it comes to keeping, which is soft cedar branches, unless we would scatter it in front of the animal, they would not eat it, they wouldn't smell the scent, and it would not be enticing. Accordingly, Chazal permitted in this situation, even though it would otherwise be a tircha yaseira, we would be permitted to scatter the soft cedar branches in front of the animal. Avoloet azirin, however, if we have straw that is tied in three places, we're allowed to open up the three ties, but we're not allowed to scatter it. Again, that would be a tircha yaseira, and not necessary tircha yaseira, because the animals will eat the straw without our scattering it in front of them. Continuing, a tircha yaseira, ein meraskin, we're not permitted to shred food for them if they can eat it otherwise. Lo es hashachas, if we have fodder, v'lo es hacharuvin lifnei behema, we're not allowed to shred the food for them, the fodder, the carobs, because they can eat it without our shredding it. Accordingly, it would be a tircha yaseira, prohibited on Shabbos. And even if they are small animals, bein daka, bein gas, the small animals, large animals, even the small animals are able to eat that food without our shredding it for them. Rabbi Yehuda matir becharuvim ledaka, Rabbi Yehuda says the carobs are hard, and it's just too difficult for a small animal to eat, so we would be permitted to shred it in front of them, to shred it for them so they can eat it. That would not be a prohibited tircha yaseira. Mishnah Gimel continuing discussing feeding of animals, and now we're going to talk about force feeding of animals. What does that mean? So if somebody was going to go on a trip with a camel, you want to feed the camel as much food as possible up front so it lasts for a number of days during the trip, so you don't have to carry extra food for the camel. So what they would do is they would force feed the food down into the deep into the camel's stomachs so that the camel cannot bring it up. So ain ofsin es hagamal, it's not permitted to force feed the camel a lot of food down to an area that he cannot bring it up, because that's a tircha yesera v'ladorsin, and you can't do it even for a little food if you're pushing it down to a place in the camel that he cannot bring it back. Aval mal'itin, however, you can put it down his throat to a place that he can still bring it back, so it's not that much of a tircha yesera on us. That would be permitted on Shabbos as well. Ve'ein mamrin es ha'agalim, it's not permitted again to force feed the agalim, those are the calves, to force feed them in a way that they cannot bring the food up. Aval mal'itin, but we can put it into their mouths, into a place that they could still bring the food up, because that's not an excessive exertion. Umehalaktikin letarnagolim, we're allowed to feed the tarnagolim, put the food down their throats to an area that they can still bring it back. And continuing discussing feeding of animals, nosni mayim lemorsan, it's permitted for us to put water into bran, to mix it, to put the water in, don't say mixing, but you can put the water in to soften the food for the animals. Avalogovlin, but we're not permitted to knead the bran and water together, because kneading is a melacha on Shabbos. Continuing, ve'nosni mayim lifnei devorim v'lifnei yonim shebeshovach, we are not permitted to give water to bees or to doves that live in the dovetail. These are animals that can go get their own food. So again, we cannot exert ourselves if the animals can eat without our involvement. If they need our involvement, then Chazal, in certain circumstances, permitted what's even a tircha yesera, for example. We're allowed to put water in front of geese and chickens, lifneyone hadrisio, a certain type of pigeon, if we're raising them, not if they're wild. And this is because these are the type of animals that they can't fend for themselves, they're dependent on us, so we would have to give them the water, even though it's somewhat of an exertion for us on Shabbos. Mishnah Dalet, now we're going to talk about also feeding animals, but we're going to talk about muksa as well. Mechatchin es hadluyim lifnei habehema, it's permitted to cut a gourd up in front of the animals. It means for the animals. It's not considered muksa on Shabbos because it can be used for animal food, and that could have been anticipated before Shabbos. So the gourds are not muksa. But according to the Tanakhama, the same thing. Ves'hanevela lifnei haklavim, even if an animal died on Shabbos, it's still permitted to cut it on Shabbos and give it as to the food to the animals. It's not considered muksa. And the rationale of the Tanakhama is because we knew going into Shabbos that this animal could die. If it dies, it's an avela. It's not a kosher animal. We wouldn't be able to eat it accordingly, because it was a possibility going into Shabbos that the animal would die. It's not muksa, and we can cut it up and give it to the animal on Shabbos. Rabbi Yehuda Omer disagrees with that. It's muksa. Im lo haisa nevela me'erev Shabbos. If it didn't die before Shabbos, it wasn't an avela yet. It only died on Shabbos, Asura, it is muksa, you can't cut it up on Shabbos for the animal. Of feast, I mean, a mukhan, it's not prepared. In other words, it is muksa because it died on Shabbos. In other words, you cannot touch it. Mishnah, other issues when it comes to Shabbos, we're going to now talk about annulment of vows. So there's a halacha, if a husband hears his wife made a vow, he has only a day to annul it. And if he doesn't annul it, it becomes a permanent vow. Same thing for a father and his daughter. He has a day to do it. So what happens if he hears about it on Shabbos? He hears the vow, or somebody tells him about the vow on Shabbos, and the time is counting. He has to get rid of it on Shabbos if he wants to. So mefiri nedarim b'Shabbos, because it's time limited in his ability to annul this vow, it is permitted to do that on Shabbos. V'nishalin the dvarim shen letzorach haShabbos. A different type of way to get rid of a vow is to go to a mumcha, an expert, or a beis din, and ask them to invalidate a vow. And when it comes to that, because you don't have the time clock of having to do it the same day, as long as it relates to Shabbos, then you can go to the basin or the muncha on Shabbos. Otherwise, you cannot. You have to wait until after Shabbos. Continuing, various other issues that would otherwise be prohibited on Shabbos, but are permitted. This was subject to machlokas either earlier in the Masechta. Number one is pokekin es hamaor. If you have a window, you don't have, in the time of Chazal, they didn't have windows and shutters that they could open and close like we have. but you had an open hole that would serve as a window and you wanted to shutter it up temporarily on Shabbos. You want to put a shutter there. So this is the shita that you're permitted to do that on Shabbos. It's not the isra bona building on Shabbos because it's simply temporarily shuttering a window on Shabbos. So that is number one. Number two has to do with measuring things on Shabbos. There's an isra derabanan to measure things on Shabbos. However, letzorech mitzvah, it would be permitted to measure on Shabbos. So at least it would be permitted to measure a rag to see if it was large enough to transfer tuma. So you have to see if it's 3 fingers by 3 fingers. So it would be permitted to measure that on Shabbos, that rag. And number three, Ves HaMikvah, be permitted to measure the mikvah to see if it's big enough to do a tefillah. That's also a letzorech mitzvah. Now we're going to get into a fairly complicated area that's going to relate to two of these that we just discussed now. The first one of temporarily shuttering a window and also measuring something on Shabbos. And we'll do a little bit inside and quite a bunch outside. Umaseh b'mei aviv shel Rabbi Tzadok u'mimei Abba Shaul ben Bodni. So we're certain the maisa that happened at that time. It says here, literally, we'll just read it and then we'll talk about what scenario was going outside, that they temporarily filled in a window with an earthenware container. It was on Shabbos. And they also, v'kashu es hamekeda begemi, and they also tied on a reed. That's a begemi. They tied on a reed onto an earthenware vessel. They first measured it to see if it was one tefach wide or not. And what they did is they tied a reed and they lifted it up. Leida im yesh begigis poseach tefachim lav. They had to see if there was a gap in a barrel, so they lifted it up to measure it. So what's going on here? So there was a certain scenario at the time in the days of Rabbi Tzadok's father and Abba Shaul, Bat Mitnis, that there were two houses that were side by side and there was a narrow valley between them. And on top, there was actually a barrel that quasi was connecting the two buildings. And what happened was that in building number one, there was someone who was close to passing away. Window was open. And building number two, right across, they were concerned if that person passed away and it was on Shabbos, then the tumah would transfer. How would it transfer? Because there was the barrel there on top. So that was acting as an ohel, and the tumah would transfer from building A to building B, and that would metame everything in their apartment, everything in there. So they had to try to fix it. So there are two ways to fix this. Number one, what they did is they pakaku es amor betapiach. They closed up their window. In building number two, they shuttered it up with a temporary shutter, and they used a earthenware container that would act as a barrier to the tumah coming in. But they didn't want to sit there all day with that their window closed and getting no light. So what they did was they wanted to see up the barrel that was the gesher was bridging the two, connecting the two buildings. There was actually a gap in that barrel, and if the gap was a tefach, more than a tefach, then it would act as a break, and the transfer of the tumah would not happen. You can't transfer tumah from one place to another if you have a gap between them or a tefach. So what they had to do was they had to measure that gap. So what they did was they measured a kli that they had. It was a tefach, and then they tied it onto a reed. They lifted it up, and they were measuring to see if that gap in the barrel was a tefach, larger than a tefach or not, using the kli that they were trying to fit in to see the sizes. And accordingly, why did they want to do that? Because they wanted to remove the shutter in their window, and if they had that gap, they indeed would not have a problem. The tumah would not transfer from building one to building two. So let's read it again. That they did, and we said there were three halachas before. The first one was that you can shutter temporarily a window on Shabbos. So they did that. Shepakaku es hamaor betafiach. They indeed temporarily closed their window with an earthenware container on Shabbos to keep the tumah from coming into building number two. And what they did as well is v'kashu es hamekeda. First, they then measured the kli that they had, the earthenware kli, a small kli, to see if it was a tefach. And then they tied onto it, v'kashu es hamekeda begemi. They tied onto that earthenware vessel a reed, leida im yesh begigis, poseach tefachim lav. They wanted to see if that gap in the barrel was a tefach or not. Was it smaller or was it a tefach? A tefach would block the tumor from transferring. We learn from that we three things, and two of them are related to the halachas we learned just before. Shippokakin, that you can shutter a window temporarily. That's number one. Number two, modinin, that there are times that is permitted to measure. Here they were permitted to measure that tefach of that kli before attaching the reed. And number three was v'koshim b'shabbos, that you can temporarily tie a knot in this situation when they tied the reed onto that earthenware vessel that was a tefach in its width. And Mazel Tov on completing Maseches Shabbos.